Good evening, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com.
Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally, authentic pumpkin seeds and pumpkin seed oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW.
For other promotional offers, please visit TheOrganicView.com's website.
Tonight, we're going to continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, which, once again, is the only radio show focused on the impact of neonicotinoids. So I would like to welcome my special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Theobald. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, June.
And we are going to discuss this week's news in regards to the impact of neonicotinoids. Now, last week, for those of you that joined us, we had a very interesting discussion about the almond board. The almond board has, the almond board rolled out honeybee best management practices. And joining us was Jeff Anderson from Minnesota, California Honey Farm, Tom?
Yes.
And Jeff has been on the show numerous times. He is a commercial migratory beekeeper, and basically he began to give us his input, but unfortunately we ran out of time. Jeff was going to join us tonight, but he's on the road. Basically, this is the time of the year when he travels all throughout the United States with his bees, and the life of a commercial migratory beekeeper is really kind of tough. They're out on the road, they're traveling all over the place, they're kind of like American nomads, if you will. But so tonight, Tom and I are going to continue the discussion because it's something that really needs to be addressed, especially since this affects the commercial beekeepers directly. And it's kind of interesting when you look at what they're calling for, because once again, you have a situation where the beekeepers are basically being told how to keep bees. And the bottom line is that the attention is really on the pesticides, not on protecting the bees. And so, you know, Tom, let's begin by just talking about this whole new best practice management. But I think what might be important is to bring up what happened last spring, right after the California almond pollination, because I think a lot of people are not aware of what happened, as well as the mass bee deaths that were caused due to the tank mixing.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. And let me just explain a little bit about what the particulars were. Almond pollination had been affected, but the beekeepers had not moved their bees out of the almonds yet. It had the pollination season had just concluded. And in some of the almond orchards, the growers were spraying a tank mix of an insecticide and a growth regulator, and the result was about 85,000 colonies were killed outright, and another 400,000 plus were affected in one way or another, and many of those colonies returned home to dwindle and die. So this affected about a quarter of all the bees in the United States, because there's such a concentration of beekeepers in the almonds for almond pollination. So the Almond Board has come out with what they have titled Best Management Practices for Beekeepers. And I'm sure that in part at least, it's well-intentioned, but it strikes the beekeepers and many others as a little strange in that the beekeepers are not the problem. It's not the beekeepers' management that is the problem here. These would better have been titled Best Management Practices for Almond Growers.
And but Tom, the problem with this is that it's really directed towards the beekeepers. Really, what it should be doing is addressing what the growers are doing and what the growers need to do when bees are present.
Right. But you need to track this back several steps, because what we're seeing here is the manipulation of the law by the chemical interests. And it goes all the way back to the EPA, and it goes back for several years now. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to disarm federal law without confronting it directly, but by doing that through administrative fiat. And the first good example that we have is the recent label changes that have been proposed, actually put in effect by the EPA, purportedly to address the neonicotinoids, but completely disregard the characteristics of those chemicals. For example, it's almost laughable, if it weren't so tragic, to suggest that the way to work around the neonicotinoids is to spray early in the morning or after sunset to avoid damage to the pollinators. When you have a chemical that has a half-life of years, spraying it before sunrise or after sunset has nothing to do with protecting anything. It's posturing to give the illusion of protection when there is none, and action when there is none. And worse yet, one of the things that the EPA has tried to push is what's called the 48-hour notice. Now, beekeepers are under no obligation to go to extraordinary lengths to stay out of harm's way so that pesticide applications that otherwise are illegal, independent of the bees, they are not required to do that, and yet the EPA has continued to try to push this 48-hour notice, which says if the applicator advises the beekeepers 48 hours ahead of time that they're going to spray some chemical or do something, it's now the beekeeper's obligation in the mind of the EPA to do whatever is necessary to protect those bees. And this is ridiculous. This is making the victim the criminal.
Well, one of the issues that I think we should elaborate about, Tom, as to why this is a problem, especially for people that don't have your vast knowledge of commercial beekeeping, is what exactly is involved. So could you just elaborate what exactly the commercial beekeepers are dealing with, and just give a hypothetical situation where, say, somebody like Jeff Anderson is approached by somebody who wants to apply whatever it may be and gives them the 48 hours. Say if it's in the middle of pollination. What would that do to the crop? And how easy is it to just pull the bees out? I mean, it's not like you're corralling dogs and bringing them out on a leash. You're talking about thousands and thousands of bees.
Many times they can't be moved because they're too large, because the weather is bad, because the roads are muddy. And there's no reason why the beekeeper should have to move. And in many cases, even if they were to move them, they may be moving them to a location where they're going to get the same kind of notification 2 days later. 48 hours, you got to get them out of here. The responsibility of the EPA is to support the law, not to look for ways to avoid the law. And, you know, I think the EPA employees have made sound recommendations as to the dangers in the handling of these chemicals, and they've just continually been disregarded by what appears to be a corrupted management that works under the direction of the chemical interests.
Now, there's a section here. The particular article that I'm looking at appears on westernfarmpress.com, And if you just Google Almond Board rolls out honeybee best management practices, it's written by Bob Curtis, Associate Director of Agricultural Affairs, Almond Board of California, and it's dated October 6th. There's a section here that is quite interesting, and it says about a couple paragraphs down under the subsection where it says focus on pesticides. It says these BMPs are comprehensive but focus on best pesticide practices. For some time now, the Almond Board has been messaging about the proper timing of fungicides needed to protect the crop during bloom. For instance, applications should occur in the late afternoon and evening when bees and pollen are not present. This timing avoids contaminating pollen with spray materials. More recently, our messaging has included insecticides. Avoid applying insecticides at bloom until more is known about their impact on bee brood, young developing bees in the hive, and avoid tank mixing insecticides with fungicides. Now, Tom, can you share with our listeners what tank mixing is and why this is such an ambiguous statement?
It's my understanding that there are no real regulations with regard to tank mixes. And a tank mix would be the combination of two or more pesticides or growth regulators or herbicides. It's to the grower's advantage sometime to make one pass over the field rather than several. The problem is that the basic attitude is you take chemical A and chemical B and you mix them together in a tank, and if they don't blow up, then you apply them.
Yeah, you're fine. And that's kind of scary because we don't know what these chemical combinations, what the effects will be.
In some cases, when they're combined, they're far more damaging than either of them is individually. But let me go back to something that you said earlier, and that is the best management practices are directed toward growers, not beekeepers. And what they're saying is avoid spraying during bloom or avoid doing this or avoid doing that. These are federal laws. These are federal label restrictions that proscribe spraying many of these chemicals on bloom. That's a federal law. These best management practices treat that federal law as if it were optional, and it's not optional. And let me take it a step further. The laws are intended to protect pollinators, not just honeybees. And honeybees were focused on initially because they're managed and could be monitored. And the belief was that if we protected the honeybees, we would be protecting a wide range of other pollinators and other life forms. So even if the beekeepers were to move out of an area, an application remains illegal. Unfortunately, the EPA turns its head to this, and there's little or no enforcement of any of these laws.
But the bottom line is, when you read it, I mean, it's right in this article, these BMPs are comprehensive but focus on best pesticide practices. For some time now, the Almond Board has been messaging about the proper timing of fungicides needed to protect the crop during bloom. Where's the protection for the bees? That it was my point. There's no they're focusing on the pesticides and the applications, but where is the focus on the bees? Why don't they have the guidelines written out that, okay, this is what the bees' needs are? These are things that you can't do, basically because it's very difficult for a commercial beekeeper to just up and move hundreds, if not thousands, of hives in a matter of 48 hours. I mean, you're talking about heavy-duty manual labor. It's not like they could just come in and whisk them away. I mean, people that are not familiar with commercial migratory beekeeping operation, you're talking about a lot of just a big operation that you have to move manually, and it's not something that you could do in a matter of hours.
No, they have to be moved after dark when all the bees are in. And
exactly. So it's complicated, is my point. You know, giving a commercial beekeeper, say like Jeff Anderson, 48 hours, You know, that's not really a lot of time. People think 48 hours, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's sufficient. It's not. And well, and that's something that I'm trying to stress.
The bees and the beekeepers are treated as if they were an inconvenience, and these best management practices treat federal law as if it were a discretion. If you can avoid spraying during bloom, and otherwise you can do whatever you want. These are clear violations of the law, and there's no enforcement, and the beekeepers are set up as the bad guys. We're the ones that are calling for enforcement of the law.
Well, the bottom line is that the beekeepers are being targeted every which way possible, that they're not, that their beekeeping practices are poor, they don't know how to do this, they don't know how to do that. And when you have a beekeeping outfit that's been operational for, say, 3 to 5 generations and had been quite successful until, you know, the last couple of years, it makes you wonder.
Well, a lot of these operations are in serious jeopardy because of what's going on, and many of these commercial beekeepers are not going to survive what's happening to them. They cannot continue to be bombarded with these chemicals.
Now, Tom, in regards to this, if we can just go back to this hypothetical situation. So, say if a commercial beekeeper is given the notification of 48 hours to remove the bees because of an application that's going to be administered, what happens to that crop if it's not properly pollinated? It's going to result in a poor crop, and basically the beekeepers are not going to be able to get if the grower sustains a loss, it's going to impact the beekeeper.
Well, certainly if they have the beekeeper move, that is going to affect the crop. There won't be pollination. In the case last year where so many bees were affected, pollination was over. And they didn't give the beekeepers warning or time to get the bees out of the almonds. And the effect was a huge bee kill.
And especially since the almond pollination is basically the first major pollination of the year. And actually, it's the largest, correct?
It's the largest migration of livestock in the world and the largest concentration of pollination in the world, yes. It requires about 1.5 million colonies of bees to pollinate over 800,000 acres. Now, that 1.5 million colonies of bees represents just about every available colony of bees in the United States. They come all the way from the Gulf Coast, Florida, the East Coast. They come from all over the country, and they're all located in California for that short period of almond pollination.
It's amazing that they even survived this far. I mean, especially last year, where they didn't even know what the exact numbers were because the bees were still showing the effects of that exposure. It makes you wonder, okay, well, you know, we're right around the corner for the next California almond pollination season. What's in store for them next?
Good question. And many of these commercial beekeepers have colonies that have been seriously decimated by these pesticide problems. And it's going to be interesting to see how the almond pollination shakes out. The beekeepers may not be able to come up with the numbers required.
We'll have to see. It'll be quite interesting.
Yeah, the beekeepers are in the process of moving their bees, many of them, out to California right now. In fact, that's where Jeff Anderson is. He's between California and Minnesota. He's taken the first 2 or 3 loads, semi-loads of bees out to California and put them in holding yards. And now he's going back to Minnesota to make another trip.
Thanks, Tom. Our next topic, it's a very interesting discussion that Tom and I have had for several years now, and basically the question has been, should neonicotinoids be banned?
Yeah, June and I have gone around on this, and I said last week that I wasn't in support of a ban. And let me explain why I said that. I think that we're up against tremendous forces here. That's obvious. These are billion-dollar products. And I'm afraid that if we focus on a ban, as appropriate and legitimate as that may be, that the forces on the other side are simply going to dig their heels in and not even talk. And one step in the right direction would be to begin to withdraw some of these products from the market as rapidly as we can. So that was what I had in mind when I said I'm not necessarily in favor of a ban.
Well, let's take a look at what they're doing with GMOs. GMOs, they've tried to label them. They've tried to do all sorts of things to allow consumers to know that the foods that they're eating contain GMO ingredients. They've tried to do so many different things, and now basically the activists are pushing for a ban on GMOs because nothing else is working. If you try to do something where you alert the consumer, or you try to restrict the growth in agriculture, there's just no clear-cut answer. And so they're moving towards banning GMOs. And with neonicotinoids, the sublethal effects alone are frightening. And especially since Dr. Hank Tenneke's research about the dose-time ratio, which basically cinches everything up, the bottom line is that it's just a matter of time. There haven't been any human health impact studies, but his research has been pretty comprehensive, as well as the research of so many other scientists that have demonstrated what the impacts are. So I think we're basically playing around with a ticking time bomb.
Well, we certainly are. These are some of the most toxic pesticides ever created, and they're being used at a level that is unprecedented. The toxic equivalent of 20 to 30 billion pounds of DDT applied to the land every year. 20 to 30 billion pounds of DDT. And I've said this in earlier programs. In the year of its highest usage, DDT was 80 million pounds in that year. 80 million pounds, 20 to 30 billion pounds.
I can't remember if it was Graham White or Tibor Szabo who talked about the size of, or a teaspoon of clothianidin or imidacloprid in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, what that would do. That alone would wreak havoc. So when you're talking about tons of these chemicals, it's frightening.
Well, it's a wonder there's anything left alive at the lower end of the food chain.
Well, they're starting to see all sorts of problems within different species. And as I said, it's just a matter of time before the human health impact is recognized. We just haven't seen any science out there that proves the impact of these chemicals on humans. So, you know, we are running out of time.
Yes, I think we are. We may be out of time already. One of the things that is afoot to try to quiet the critics is to plant more flowers to improve habitat. And it's going on not only here in the United States, but in other countries as well, one of which is the UK. The question that we raise is that given the level of poisoning of the environment, is this really an improvement? If you have poisoned land and poisoned water, and you plant it with flowers that are attractive to pollinators, and those flowers draw up those poisons, what have you accomplished?
Well, furthermore, Tom, the plants that they're planting, unless they're organic, and they the people planting these flowers and trees, shrubs, what have you, know for a fact that they have not been treated with any neonicotinoids. Basically, all they're doing is just creating more problems by planting them. So it's important that the plants, trees, shrubs, what have you, are neonicotinoid free if they're going to plant them.
But if you plant organic plants free of any neonicotinoids, in land that's been previously poisoned, which is almost everywhere.
Everything, yeah.
Then those plants, they may start out as organic, but as soon as they begin to draw nutrients and groundwater from the soil, they become poisonous.
Yes. So the bottom line is, what do we do?
Well, I think the focus needs to be to assess just what the level of that contamination is, and they have very carefully avoided that because
they don't
want to know.
Well, it'll hurt market share, bottom line. I mean, we're looking at a new growing season, a new year of sales, and regardless of EPA's announcement that neonics are of no value to soybeans, it doesn't matter. A whole new growing season is about to begin. It's in progress. Maybe they're not planting this very minute, but the thing is, folks, you don't just begin planting, the next day. It's a whole process. You have to order seeds. You have a lot of preparation. Now, I do want to mention that there is an upcoming discussion on IPM with the EPA. So that's coming up later on this month. So that'll be interesting. And both Tom and I will discuss it after the discussions have taken place to share with all of you what we've learned or maybe what we would like to learn.
Well, it will also be streamed on the internet, and anyone who's interested can join in, may get an opportunity to ask a question or make a comment. Maybe you could post that link on your site.
Sure. June. Now, we don't have too much time left, but I just want to bring up two more issues. The first one is the French honey farmers. It's been reported that they face record low harvest, and that's something that is really disturbing, especially since there have been a number of people, especially in other parts of the country, that have had the opposite experience. So, this is coming from smallholder.co.uk, and once again, it's really horrible when you're reading these types of articles about what's going on in other parts of the world.
Well, we're seeing these small crops all around the globe. The United States crop is expected to be perhaps the lowest on record. The evidence of destruction is so clear. It's just dumbfounding that the regulators are doing their best not to address these problems.
And unfortunately, on that note, the last thing that we're going to discuss tonight is a brand new systemic called Flupyra difurone. And I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah, they give us these tongue twisters and we got to practice them. My story is clothianidin. I taught everybody to mispronounce it, and then I finally talked to someone who knew how to pronounce it, and I realized I'd been pronouncing it wrong. So, Flupyra difurone, or some close facsimile to that. It's another systemic. They keep throwing these at us. We cannot survive what's going on. We simply can't.
We need to consult with our counterparts over in Europe to see what their pronunciation is, so that we can further twist it around, so that we can understand how to pronounce it. It's amazing that they're just cranking out new chemicals, and unfortunately, this is what's happening, folks. But Tom, we are actually out of time, and I just want to say thank you again for coming on the show and participating. It's something that we really need to keep doing.
You're welcome, June. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom. And these things really need to get out there. Unfortunately, until we start seeing the results that we need to see, in which the pollinators are protected, we just have to keep getting the information out there. Anyway, have a good night, folks, and please join us next week. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great evening.